I want more than for her to somehow have escaped. For her to drive up in that ancient car and get out all furious and say, "Hey, why'd you leave me behind?" But we saw the blood. There was too much. I held her hand, and it didn't feel like anything. As soon as I touched her, I just... Jessica, I knew. And you know it too.
Jessica picked up her fork again and twirled it between her fingers, not meeting his eyes.
"I feel like we're waiting for something to happen," she said quietly.
John picked up the menu again.
"I know, but I think that's just how this feels."
From behind him, he heard the waitress approach for the third time.
"We don't know yet," he said without looking up. "Why am I even looking at this?"
John set the menu back down and covered his face with his hands.
"Can I join you?"
John looked up. An unfamiliar, brown-haired young man slid into the booth next to Jessica and across from John.
"Hey, Artie,"
Jessica said with a weak smile.
"Hey,"
he said, glancing from her to John and back again. John said nothing.
"Everyone okay?"
Artie asked finally.
"I heard there was some kind of accident. Where's Charlie?"
Jessica looked down, tapping the fork on the table. John met the newcomer's eyes, then shook his head. Artie blanched, and John looked out the window. The parking lot outside blurred as he fixed his gaze on the smudged and streaky glass.
"The last thing she said to me was..."
John lightly touched his fist to the table.
"Don't let go of me."
He turned back to the window.
"John,"
Jessica whispered.
"And I did. I let go of her. And she died alone."
There was silence for a few moments.
"I can't believe it,"
Artie said, his brow furrowed.
"We had just started dating, you know?"
Jessica kept her face smooth, and John turned his thousand-yard stare on Artie. The boy faltered.
"I mean, we were going to, I think. She really liked me anyway."
He looked to Jessica, who nodded.
"She liked you, Artie," she said.
John turned back to the window.
"I'm sure she did,"
he said evenly. Random thoughts swirled through his mind. The mess of her room, the pang of concern when he saw her childhood toy, Theodore the stuffed rabbit, torn apart.
Charlie, what was wrong?
There was so much more he wanted to ask her. Those blind faces with their smooth, nearly featureless faces and their couplet word games. Something, everything, about them had disturbed him, and now that he pictured them again, he was bothered for another reason. They looked like William Afton's designs, the blank faces with no eyes.
"Charlie, what made you think of that?"
Jessica made an indistinct cry, and John startled back to the present to see her racing to the door, where Marla had appeared. He got up more slowly and followed her, with a sense of déjà vu. He was waiting his turn as Marla hugged Jessica close, stroking her hair and whispering something John couldn't hear. Marla released Jessica and turned to him.
"John,"
she said, taking both his hands. The sorrow in her eyes was what broke him. He leaned in and hugged her close, hiding his face in her hair until he could compose himself. When his breathing had steadied, she pushed him gently back and took his arm. They all went back to the table where Artie waited, peering uncertainly over the side of the booth. They sat down again. Marla slid in next to John and looked from him to Jessica.
"You have to tell me what happened," she said quietly.
Jessica nodded, letting her hair fall over her face for a minute in a shiny brown curtain.
"Yeah, I want to know too,"
Artie piped up, and Marla glanced at him as if only just registering his presence.
Hi, she said, sounding slightly puzzled. I'm Marla.
Artie, Charlie and I were... He glanced at John. We were good friends.
Marla nodded. Well, I wish we were meeting under different circumstances. Jessica, John, please tell me.
They glanced at each other. John looked to the window again. He was content to let Jessica do the talking, but felt an obligation, not to talk to Marla, but to talk about Charlie.
Charlie was chasing something from her past, John said, his voice calm. She found it, and it didn't let her leave.
There was a building collapse, Jessica added. Her father's house.
Charlie didn't make it out,
John said roughly. He cleared his throat and reached for the glass of water in front of him. John vaguely heard Marla and Jessica exchanging words of comfort, but his mind was elsewhere. The woman, kneeling in the pool of Charlie's blood, holding her hand. He had only glimpsed her for a moment. She had looked almost as surprised to see him as he was to see her. But there was something familiar about her. He turned away from the others again and closed his eyes, trying to picture it. Dark hair, dark eyes. She looked severe and unafraid, even with the ground shaking and the building tumbling down over her head. I know her. The woman he remembered looked different, younger, but her face was the same. Suddenly he had it. The last day I saw you, Charlie, back when we were kids. She came to pick you up from school, and the next day you weren't there, and the next day, and the day after that. Then even us kids began to hear the rumors that your father had done what he did. And that's when I realized I would never see you again.
John shivered. John, what's wrong? Marla said sharply, then blushed. I mean, what are you thinking?
Her aunt was there, he said slowly. Her aunt Jen.
What? Marla said. Where? They hadn't spoken in months, Jessica said doubtfully.
I know, John said. But she was there. When I ran back, just before they pulled me away, I saw her. With Charlie.
The thought struck him like a blow across the chest, and he looked out the window again so that he wouldn't have to meet anyone's eyes.
Charlie's Aunt Jen was there, he repeated to the dirty pane of glass.
Maybe Clay called her, Jessica offered.
John didn't respond. No one spoke for a long moment.
I think it's best not to look for more mysteries, Marla said slowly. Charlie was... Are you all ready to order?
The waitress asked brightly. John turned to look at her with impatience in his eyes, but Marla cut him off.
Four coffees, she said firmly. Four eggs and toast scrambled.
Thanks, Marla, John whispered. I'm not sure if I can eat, though.
She glanced at the rest of them. Artie looked briefly as if he wanted to say something. Then he cast his eyes down at the table. The woman departed, and Marla looked around.
We all have to eat, and you can't sit around in a diner all day without ordering anything.
I'm glad you're here, Marla, John said. She nodded.
We all love Charlie, she said, looking at each of them in turn. There's never a right thing to say, is there? Nothing ever makes it okay, because it's not. All those crazy experiments, Jessica said suddenly. I didn't understand, but she was so excited about them, and now she'll never get to finish.
It's not fair, Marla said softly.
So what do we do?
Jessica said with a plaintive note in her voice. She looked at Marla like she must have the answer.
Jessica, sweetie, Marla said. All anyone can do is hold on to the Charlie that we all loved.
It's over, John said hoarsely,
turning away from the window abruptly.
That psychopath murdered her, just like he did Michael and all those other kids. She was the most fascinating, the most amazing person I have ever known, and she died for nothing.
She did not die for nothing, Marla snapped, leaning in toward him. Rage flashed in her eyes. No one dies for nothing, John. Everyone's life has a meaning. Everyone has a death, and I hate it that this was hers. Do you hear me? I hate it. But we can't change it. All we can do is remember Charlie and honor Charlie's life from the beginning to the very end.
John held her stormy gaze for a long moment, then broke away and looked down at his folded hands on the table. She mirrored the movement and placed one hand over his. Jessica gasped, and he turned back to the table wearily.
What, Jessica? John asked.
Her nervous energy was beginning to exhaust him. She didn't answer, but gave him an incredulous look and turned back to the window. Marla leaned past John, craning her neck to see. Reluctantly, he looked too, letting his eyes focus for the first time on the parking lot outside the window, and not the pane of glass itself. It was a car. The woman driving killed the engine and got out. She was slim and tall, with long, straight brown hair that glistened in the sun. She was wearing a bright red, knee-length dress with black combat boots, and she strode purposefully toward the diner. They all watched motionless, as if the slightest sound might rupture the illusion and send her away. The woman was almost at the door. Artie said it first.
Charlie?
Marla shook her head. She leaped up and turned, calling from the seat.
Charlie!
She ran for the door, and Jessica was quick on her heels, crying out after her. They rushed to the doorway to meet her just as she walked in. John stayed where he was, craning his neck to see the door. Artie seemed confused, his mouth open slightly and his brow furrowed. John watched for a steady moment, then turned away decisively, facing across the table with a grave expression. He didn't speak until Artie met his gaze.
That's not Charlie.
This is Suzanne Elise Freeman. We hope that you have enjoyed this production of Five Nights at Freddy's, Book 2, The Twisted Ones, by Scott Cawthon and Kira Breed Risley. This program was produced at Dion Audio and directed by Adam James Connor. Executive producer Paul R. Gagne. Print edition published by Scholastic Inc. Text copyright 2017 by Scott Cawthon. Production copyright 2017 by Scholastic Inc. All rights reserved. Look for other Five Nights at Freddy's titles from Scholastic Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.